With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Because it is 10 years to the day that Frank Lampard and all the little Scots from Chelsea embarrassed themselves by getting drunk and being sick and taking their clothes off in front of American tourists.
They did, didn't they?
Is that right?
Can't celebrate.
She's a lady.
Hi, I'm Robbie Earle, and this is the Football Ramble.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus, and it's football time. And for such a time, I've brought my lovely three friends along. Pete is one of them.
Hello there.
Luke is the other.
All right.
And Jimbo is the other.
Hello.
That didn't work.
The other.
Chaps, how are you all?
Good, thanks. Pretty
adequate.
Good.
Yeah, well, it's better than normal. Now then, Mario Balotelli and Gigi Buffon recently visited a prison. We will talk about this later. Yeah. But we'd like to start with, if you were a prisoner, which footballer or footballers would you like to visit you? Pete.
I'm probably going to go for Niall Ranger because he allegedly got caught drink driving at the weekend, and only 2 weeks later he was told off by the police. So yeah, he's.
So you'd want to keep him in there?
No, because he's clearly familiar. He's clearly familiar with a holding cell, so I just think he'd be able to teach me the tricks of the trade, etc.
Okay, so. Like it. Yep, makes sense. Makes sense. It's a strong start to such an important question. Luke,
I went for Tony Adams.
Right.
Just for the rationale similar to Pete's, that he knows his way around.
He could make prison hooch if needed.
Alleged connections.
Give me tips. I think he'd be a good man to have around. He'd be quite good fun. He takes himself very seriously, so I'd have a lot of time taking the piss out. Yeah. I suppose he's just visiting, though. He's not in my cell.
Yeah, no. True.
So if he was in my cell...
They could visit you in the cell.
Good, okay, yeah. Why not? Yeah. Why not?
It's Pablo Escobar.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah. Basically, Tony Adams.
Right. Tony.
He could be like passing you like a file in a cake or something. Oh, there's your cake, Luke.
Files in it, I mean.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I'm going to change it.
What you need is someone, because that's how they deliver drugs and stuff. They throw like tennis balls. They kick tennis balls over the walls.
Kick?
Because you need the elevation. So I reckon somebody like Jimmy Carragher could smash it, I reckon. That's all he seems to do. There we go.
But he's no real good to you in the prison.
No, he could throw things out.
He's just Rory Delap.
He could throw messages out.
Rather than take them out. Yeah. Just remember them.
I don't know what's happening.
If he could throw the end of a rope ladder out, couldn't he?
Okay, yeah.
I was asking a lot of them, man.
Jim.
I don't know why we put these people in prison.
Where's he got a rope ladder from? In prison. That's specifically things they don't give out. That's on the list.
Luke, you learn things in prison, you make it out of a bar of soap or something like that.
Yeah. That's it.
Ada BC and Oz, the TV shots.
So basically, after all your impressions, I initially thought Tony Adams would be decent to have around. Now I've slowly realised I'm going to file down the razor blade and shank him.
Okay. Jim.
Give some credit in a minute. Well, I basically, if I was in prison, which presumably, what have I done, by the way?
You've taken down the government and you've been unsuccessful.
Fraud.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I'm down for fraud. And basically, I don't want anyone that's going to come in and like help me break out or anything like that. I want someone who's going to come in, reassure me, just go, it's going to be all right when you get out. You can rehabilitate yourself. You know, someone that's just going to make you sort of feel good about the world. So I would go for Sir Bobby Robson, because he'd come in and be a lovely old kindly gent. That'd be the sort of person you'd want to just spend a bit of time with, before going back to your cell.
Yeah,
it's a good
answer. Just getting on with it.
He'd be like the librarian who's been there for ages.
Like in Shawshank.
Oh, in Shawshank Redemption. Yeah, he would be,
He'd just tell you to sort of hang in there, son.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I would go for Calais and Bobby Moore.
That's two. Well,
yes, two, yeah.
I allowed. Said footballer or footballers in the question.
Oh, okay, sorry. Didn't pick up on that.
I did that in, didn't you?
And they break me out. Escape to victory.
Oh, there it is.
It is. Do you know what the pages...
Are you in Nazi prison then?
Do you know, probably. Do you know what the back pages of the papers are going to say tomorrow?
What?
Spell a hat-trick hero. The points again, right. Ladies and gentlemen.
Boys, I refuse to recognise this.
In the paper that you're going to publish
recognise this committee.
The government-owned paper, yep. The spread of time.
Yeah. What a paper it is.
I'm staging a coup of the points
it's
right
the best
now. This
answer.
Is outrageous.
Listen,
the best answer
listeners,
gets it.
Fight it. That's all I'm going to say.
Exactly.
Fight it.
You can hear the duress we're under here.
Come and get me.
Yeah.
I'm like the new Gaddafi, because the old one's on his way out. Right then, Premier League. Yeah. Sergio Aguero got another hat-trick. The man's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Where have they found him from? Where has he come from?
They found some obscure European country. Yeah. He was playing in.
All I've, on my notes I've written next to Phil Jones and Sergio Aguero, freight trains. That's what I mean. They're unstoppable.
Yeah. I mean, Aguero's helped with the incredible sort of talent he's got behind him. Silva's set up for his third was just magical.
Silva's one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, of course.
If not the best player, he's so good. He's the movement between all those front players, the sort of versatility of Aguero's also one of those players who can play a variety of different sort of striking roles. He's not just an off the shoulder player. He can drop deep, he can go out wide. He's got it all, really.
A bit of a playmaker himself, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's an interesting sort of, you know, set up play over there.
It's good to see that the club will carry on winning now that Gary Cook's not there.
Yeah,
the driving force behind. He's resigned, of course. He resigned, wasn't he?
Yeah, his biggest regret is that he may no longer be influencing the game.
He sort of made the point.
I reckon it's probably that email.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, his second biggest regret.
The weird thing was, like, he said that he never sent it or he got hacked and then suddenly he resigned over it because there is some truth in it. He said
there's an error of judgment.
It's like, well, if you sent it or you didn't.
Yeah, no, it's just a very sort of coded admission, really, isn't it? It's just to save any further
hacked.
Embarrassment.
The other Manchester club, the noisy neighbours, Rooney got a hat trick.
Yeah,
they're kicking off.
The pair of them are ridiculous.
Yeah. Is this going to be a straight shootout between United and City?
Well, it's early days, yeah.
Isn't it? Well,
on the Ramble Facebook wall, somebody was sort of saying that he was listening to 606. I don't listen myself. apparently somebody calling going, Rooney is going to be better than Messi this season. So he's not even the best player in Manchester, for crying out loud.
I was on the BBC World Service yesterday and someone made a point that... thank you. Someone made a point that is Rooney's confidence linked to the fact that he's had his hair done? Is he playing with more confidence now because he feels much better in himself because of his hair? I think it's a reasonable point.
No, maybe.
Well, that was just a big rest.
It's a better team, isn't it? They've added that sort of flair. And I mean, cleverly and Welbeck, really surprisingly, seem to have come in and just revitalised them. It's just that sort of the energy they bring into it. And just they've just got a myriad possibilities now with that squad. Ashley Young's obviously been a factor. Jones has just come in.
Smalling.
It's just been really straightforward for Jones to settle in. Yeah, Smalling sort of, you know, stepped up from what he was doing last season.
It was a nasty one. On Cleverly from Kevin Davis.
He has apologised, old.
But I mean, it's
Cleverly accepted.
Hey, Dav.
It's all.
What else are you going to say?
Oh, yeah.
Meant it.
Yeah.
Only.
Phil Jones was brilliant, though, wasn't he?
Oh,
he
brilliant.
Was all over the place.
That run for Rooney's, I think it was his second goal, wasn't it? It's just marauding. He was playing at right backs, so, you know, he's got a bit further licence to get out of field like that. But it's just the mobility and sort of technique of all of the players just across the pitch.
I don't think Bolton helped himself. Bolton gave him a lot of room, a lot of space. It was almost like a textbook example of how not to play against a team who are dynamic, who move all over the pitch interchange properly, and they just didn't get near them. Yeah. I mean, the only one who came out of the game with any credit, really, and Kevin Davis was lucky to stay on the pitch. Mark Davis was the only one who really came out of any credit. He sort of tried to drive him forward almost single-handedly, but he couldn't do it, and obviously he couldn't do it.
Yeah. And while all that was going on, Arsenal were picking up 3 points, Jimbo.
Yeah, wasn't a sort of classic.
It was a glow.
It was a glow, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was that really strange incident with Theo Walcott, that odd shot that sort of looped up. Nearly went out of the stadium, came back down again, and then just so gutted for the goalkeeper when that happens. It must be said as well, that's a hell of a tight angle that Arshavin's put that away for.
Yeah, and he must have bet it the wrong way as well.
Yeah, when I heard about it, because I didn't see the game, I thought it was like just it'd been gifted a tap in or something like that. But no,
it reminded me of Carney's hat trick goal. Remember that one
from Chelsea?
Yeah, right,
that was much more spectacular.
Oh, it was, but it was a similar position, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
maybe it was a bit more acute actually.
Nice to get Carney a mensch though.
Yeah, thank you very much.
But yeah, it's important for Arsenal to get those 3 points on the board, and
from Frimpong's back, the Terminator.
Apparently Frimpong was really having a go at Arshavin at one point for not doing any tracking back, or you know,
that's a bit garbage.
Yeah, well, exactly, but it's
character assassination.
It's good someone's digging him out.
Exactly.
He's been there 10 minutes and he spotted it.
He scored the goal, Arshavin, and it was like a really arrogant celebration. I do like Arshavin. He's got a great range of facial expressions.
Yeah,
but that was a really arrogant celebration.
He's not from the same dimension as
me. That comes to something when you. The reason why you like a footballer is because of his range of facial expressions.
I've got nothing else. I've got nothing else to go on.
That's true. Former Arsenal man Adebayor got the goal, didn't he? Mm. His goal, debut goal at the Spurs. Good win away at Wolves. Nice move. Nice to see Parker in there as well.
Slips.
He slotted it. I love the slip. Go on.
I think Adebayor is going to be a big hit at Tottenham because all he's needed is to play. He's not really played since he was at Arsenal.
Well, and declaring his love for Arsenal straight after the game is probably going to help him as well.
Is that what he did?
Yeah, he went, you know, I love Arsenal, you know, I love the club, they've always got a place in my heart. So one of those kind of things. I don't care what anybody thinks of me here. I'm a professional, I'm here to do a job and all this. And I thought, you idiot.
Oh, what has he done that already? Because I can think of a particular incident when he was at City that kind of intimated maybe he didn't like Arsenal.
He's a champion wind-up merchant.
But what he should say is, you know, obviously Arsenal, it's still an important club to me, that, you know, had a lot of good times here. But
don't
now
mention
I'm
Arsenal.
Well, yeah.
He just scored for Spurs.
But he should have said,
put it in
but
your
I'm now here for Spurs. I'm a Spurs player. He basically just went, I'm a professional. I don't care what anybody thinks of me. And I'm here to do a job, sort of thing.
I like that, though. I think it's honest and it is sort of just.
At least it's not lip service, I suppose.
Sort of like if the cable guy comes around and you're just like, cup of tea or anything? And he's just like, look, I'm here to do a job. I don't care what you think of me. You know.
I don't care what you think of me. Get on the phone to him. Can you send someone else? It's just bringing me down.
He's meant to be sorting out my Sky Plus. He just keeps banging on about TiVo.
I'm having an existential crisis here. One of the things I wanted to say was that we didn't pick up on it really too much last week, is that Scott Parker, football writer's footballer of the year, $5 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but at his age, coming from a championship club, you know.
13?
Well, Peter Crouch was 13, he went for $10 million.
Because people are stupid.
Well, I was saying this, like, it was such a shame as Parker never went to South Africa, or maybe it was a good thing because of the experience, but people say, well, it's easy in hindsight to say, but he was the football writer's player of the year, playing a defensive midfield role for the team, one of the teams that got relegated.
Yeah.
It was an incredible season for him, and he never went to the World Cup.
It was a shame, but nothing could have saved that World Cup. Yeah. So let's not worry about
him and Bobby Zamora would have done it. Let me tell you that. Now, rumour has it that Harry Redknapp might be approached by the FA, the Football Association of England, to take charge of said country for the European Championships. If, of course, if we qualify, which I'd imagine we would at the moment, because Capello's not able to lift the team at a tournament. They're worried about this. Get Redknapp in.
Who's decided this?
Idiots.
There was a great quote in The People where they described Harry Redknapp as player friendly.
He's a player as he likes.
He's a notable sort of wind up guy for a lot of his team.
Some player friendly, not others.
Other players for different teams.
Favourites friendly.
would that be a signal for Capello to...
I can imagine Capello just standing on the side. Sure. No problem.
Exactly.
Fill your boots. Oh. Can I make you a cup of tea?
Summer off.
I am a professional.
Can I be your number two, Harry? Can I?
Yeah.
It is bizarre. I mean, where has this rumour surfaced from? Because the rumour is saying that they're thinking about it. So I don't know how they've got into these people's minds.
According to that nonsense paper, they were very much, it's been discussed at the highest level corridors of power.
I think it was in the Daily Mail as well.
Yeah.
Make what you will of that.
Can any of you see any credence in that? Do you think that there's a chance that like Capello will be placed before the replaced before the Euros?
They're not big on ballsy moves.
Our
FA, though, are they? Really?
They'll take so long to decide. By the time it happens, it'll be finished.
Yeah.
The Euros will be done.
I mean, obviously, the World Cup was just awful, but you know, you got to look at his win percentage is ridiculous.
It's the best ever.
Really, really strong in qualifying, and you know, you can't really. There's no reason to get rid of him. You know, it's the kind of minutiae that always comes with the England job. It's like, he doesn't speak English well enough. It's the players didn't like the camp the last time around. It's like all these silly little things.
I would like the FA to do it so we can get Harry Redknapp out there and get Harry Redknapp out of the system. He can fall out with a couple of players and we realise what his shortcomings as a man. manager. He can't buy players in, he can't get rid of them. He's forced to use an ageing squad. And then the next person who comes in, maybe a couple of years later, let him have the fruits of Alex Ferguson's loins, so to speak. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think they should get it out of their system.
I'll say what I said after the World Cup. I mean, the players, the group of players we've had that have been similar, give or take, the last three sort of managers, Capello, and before that McLaren, before that Ericsson, three very different managers, very different styles.
That's right.
And England have been totally appalling with all of them. Mm. So where's the buck stop?
But you see, that's what we love about, you know, the Spanish have a system now. They were used to be a bit, you know, maybe in the 90s and all, and the early noughties, you know, that a lot of good players didn't have a system, but now they've got a system, they know how to play, go out and do it.
The Germans.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Yogi Love, he was one of Klinsmann's understudies, and actually they said that he was one of the guys who ran the team. Klinsmann was kind of just ahead of it.
Yeah.
The face, rather. Now he's in, they've got a way to play. England, they turn up, they're not too sure what they expect. Capello's now trying to get some kind of system. He's trying to get a mindset, a winning mentality. He's actually trying to weed out a lot of the problem, and we need him in there for this tournament, because I think if Redknapp comes in, it'll just be, oh yeah, jobs for the boys. You
it's a long term project, isn't it? And what England were crying out for a long time, what England fans were crying out for a long time, was some fresh blood, and for players to sort of, you know, the Gerard Lampard thing to be broken up, and just for different players to be trying.
Harry Redknapp's talking about signing David Beckham, for crying out loud.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Capello has really moved along the squad. He's given younger players a chance. He's allowing them to sort of establish themselves a bit more. And we've got a good crop coming through.
As he said on Goals on Sunday, he said, Stephen Gerrard good.
I think one of the things that is a concern is that, I mean, a lot of people jumped on England's back after the Wales game. Yeah. I don't think they weren't as bad as people were
Wales
making
Wales were excellent.
Yeah, Wales were good. And England in the first half were okay, I thought. But one of the things that's concerning is you've got someone like Chris Smalling, who, for my money, is, like I said before, he's a Rolls Royce of a player. He's got a lot of potential, and he goes from looking world class for Manchester United, lovely little short balls, really comfortable on the ball. For England, he seems to sort of lose his confidence a little bit and then bang it long. Yep. And it's almost a bit concerning. Why is he doing that? Is it Wembley? Is it the crowd on his back?
I mean, at the World Cup, England did not look like Capello's England. They just absolutely reverted to type, and that is the worry, isn't it? And Capello has said he thinks, you know, there's still a hangover from that, and there's a bit of there's something wrong at Wembley as well. The atmosphere's...
They prefer playing away, don't they?
It's strange at Wembley, but he's pointing these things out, and he's getting slammed for these things.
No, he needs support.
His fault, but he's saying, okay, this is... Clearly, this is what's wrong. I can tell. This is what I'm trying to fix. Yeah. Well, he said it's not an admission of guilt.
No, in the warm up,
but that's what it's been taken.
He said in the warm up, he could see that the players weren't, their heads weren't right. He knew in the warm up they'd struggle.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's odd, but I mean,
one of the few people around this table have actually played at Wembley. I didn't enjoy the sort of surface. I thought it was a little bit the grass is a little bit long, it's a bit dry. But
was that the only reason you didn't enjoy it, or just?
I'm not very good at football, and it is massive. It's the biggest pitch I've ever played on in my life. It was like Hackney Fields.
We do have to remember as well that, you know, with all these points, you know, that, you know, they don't like playing at Wembley, blah blah blah, all these sort of confidence issues, they still won the game, they still got the job done.
Well, yeah,
they
exactly
did. A very crucial point. That's one
absolutely. I mean, we must say that actually I don't think Capello did handle the camp very well in South Africa, but I think he's learning. That's one thing he certainly does, is he learns, and he's actually adapting for a guy, and, you know, an old dog learning new tricks is quite good. But one thing I was going to say about the England-Wales game was the Wales chant. The fans, boom, 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 everybody said Wales, Wales.
I had to stop myself joining in.
Yeah, I was about to run across the pitch.
Get involved, yeah.
Absolutely superb. But the trouble is with England, as you say, just before we move on from this, that, like, if England went away to Spain, you know, like, I know Spain are coming to Wembley soon, I think, in a friendly, but if England did go away to Spain, especially in the competitive matches, and they hammered us, and we nicked it 1-0, we mugged them, we wouldn't be going, hey, we've mugged them. We'd be like, well, it's a load of rubbish, isn't it? We're so lucky to win that. We've got to get that, you know, kind of just joyous mentality back. It's a football match and we won. You know, so
that would never happen, by the way.
Well, let's make it happen. Influence in the game. It's something completely different. Asamoah Gyan has moved to the United Arab Emirates.
I saw Asamoah Gyan's press conference for his new club today, and he said an amazing quote, which I think, you know, he just got his words a bit like mixed up and didn't think about what he was saying, but he said, hopefully I'll try my best.
Way off.
I would hope so, Asamo. We've spent a lot of money to get you here. Well, I'm not a very confident man, you know. I don't know.
You can imagine.
We'll just have to see how it pans out. Might not like it. Didn't like Sunderland.
Imagine the chairman who just signed like 10, 20, 30. What? I was I did a bit of digging around about the money, because it's funny, because I originally thought, because he's going on loan, well, he's just put on the same money, I don't really know where he's gone there. Mm. But apparently it's not that.
Every football deal is different, isn't it?
He's got a considerable pay rise. He's earning $200,000 a week, and he was given $1 million signing on fee as well.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
How is this not a signing?
$6 million as well?
Yeah, apparently so, yeah.
That's a very good point. How is that?
Well,
not
as I said last week, I said the loan, the sort of transfer window never really closes with the whole loan business, if you can do that sort of nonsense.
Yeah, but isn't it down to the transfer window of the place where the clubs
are buying. But the other thing is that Jan's got, I think, a fair few parasites around him.
Because he was being
farmed all around Europe throughout the transfer window, wasn't he? He's only been there a year. It cost him a lot of money as well. Yeah. Steve Bruce
played well.
He was in and out, wasn't he?
He was very exposed, I think. Once they lost Bent, it just sort of fell bits for them. He was just sort of isolated up top. And to be fair, I think this is the team that Bruce has brought very, very well, even though I can't stand the tit. he's brought very well this summer.
Why don't you like him?
It's just going to take some time to bed in, and I think the players that he's brought in, fantastic. See the signs. Bentner, for crying out loud. That's a brilliant sign.
Well, yeah. Bentner will get game time in his favoured position, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Nearly scored a header against Chelsea.
He did his best to chuck it all away last weekend. Bruce is under immense pressure, and I was harsh to him last time we spoke about him, but I do feel a little bit sorry for him. And they've lost, I think they've only won like 3 in 19 or something. They've lost 8 of 9 at home recently, and he's under a lot of pressure. Yeah, it's the last thing he needs, really. But I mean, part of being a manager is keeping these players happy, getting them playing, getting them performing. It's part of his job, and it does annoy me when you see managers say, oh, well, he just wants to go. Well, I've said to him, I put him in the office, I said, this has gone on long enough. That's not management.
Yeah.
Management is sitting someone down, dealing with people in different ways, and saying, you know, what can we do to make you perform, to make you happy?
You can say no.
Exactly,
The ball is always in their court.
It's like being a social worker, I imagine, part of it.
Right,
off to Spain we go. Barcelona have dropped points.
Mm. Yeah.
Real Sociedad 2, Barcelona 2. Barcelona were 2-0 up.
Yeah, and when the goal was in the space of about 2 minutes.
That's right, yeah.
After 11 minutes, they were 2-0 up, Fabregas and Xavi.
No, I mean the Sociedad goals.
Yeah, both of them were. So Barcelona scored within a minute, I think, and then Sociedad scored two within a minute or two as well.
Yeah, it's slightly more spaced out, but yeah, they were in quick succession.
They lost Sanchez as well for 8 weeks. He's torn his hamstring.
He started really well as well, for sure.
Did I see Messi do a dive?
Yeah, no way!
I couldn't believe that.
Wouldn't happen, Pete. Pete, honestly, if you cut this out, yeah, it's been.
You must have been thinking of Ronaldo.
Oh, that is right. That is true.
He's on the score sheet again. Real Madrid 4, Getafe 2. Real Madrid top of the league, 2 points above Barca. Pete, can you believe it?
I can't believe it's a Quintero's miss. Ronaldo's bicycle kick.
I'm glad he's there. He's a classy player.
You like him?
Yeah, I do.
It's all kicking off in Spain about the duopoly, though, isn't it? The chairman of the other clubs have got together and got to sort this out, because the TV money's split in this really horribly unfair way.
They make so much
Madrid
money.
Get the majority of it.
They get 80% of it, and the rest is
they're completely sugar daddy in the same way that clubs with rich owners are, really, just from the setup of the way their league works. And I know it would be good to see some more parity there, wouldn't it?
From a league setup, you sort of the least you can expect is, you know, a level playing field financially.
Get to watch Racing Santander.
Yeah.
Was it Villarreal that were spanked 6-0 by Real Madrid?
Yeah.
They're in the Champions League.
Yeah. it's they're a good team, Villarreal.
Very good team.
Zero. Oh, it was Barcelona who beat them, I think.
Right, yeah. I knew it was one of them.
Yeah, one of the big two. Now then, Serie A is underway, thank goodness. Milan drew 2-2 with Lazio. Lazio 2 up, but Zlatan and Cassano got the goals.
Zlatan won't be going to Barcelona now.
As predicted by me, Tori's groin muscle, was it?
Do you think he's done it on purpose?
I think just to please me.
With his hand, with his bare hand. Put it inside his leg and just yanked. Left me out for a bit.
You said that he wouldn't fancy going to the Nou Camp for the Champions League game, and lo and behold, he's got injured.
It's a big injury, though.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
it's an actual legitimate injury.
When somebody told me that, I thought, it's a torn.
It's not something you can sort of go, I've torn me groin muscle. Then, like, the manager or the coaching staff aren't going to go, well, we probably need to sort that out somehow. Pin it or get an operation, or at least X-ray you.
Or the other option is that, you know, they're just lying for him.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't fancy
Don't be surprised
it.
If he plays the following week.
On Thursday, I bet he goes, oh, do you know what? I feel a bit better now.
That deep heat's worked.
Yeah.
Also, Juventus, their first competitive match in their new stadium was a 4-1 win over Parma. Their stadium looks great. Apparently, yeah, it's good. Quite. They wanted a kind of more British style, no running track, quite close in.
I say, they've reduced the. They're one of the few European clubs ever to reduce their.
Yeah, they could never fill their whole stadium.
Well, the Dele Alpi
was
very unpopular.
Yeah, it's built on service, yeah.
Dele Alpi was very unpopular. It was built for the 1990 World Cup, I think. And it was really unpopular. They never filled it. I don't think they ever had a racing track
as well, and the sound didn't really carry very well, but apparently it's a proper like cauldron of sound now.
It's also in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe they've redeveloped this sort of area around the ground so it's easy to get to. I don't know, but that wouldn't make sense.
There's a couple of casinos and shopping centres, I think.
Pirlo played well.
A couple of assists, I think he got. The last goal scored by Marchisio, I think it was. Lovely little deft volley. You check that out, it's well worth it. Pirlo with a nice ball over the top. But Juventus opened their new stadium by playing Notts County, which I thought was a lovely touch.
It was very nice, given that they're sort of inspired by them when they were first formed.
Yeah,
and
of course their colours.
And Lee Hughes scored the first goal at Juventus' new stadium.
No, Luca Toni did.
Oh, did he?
Luca Toni got the first goal, and Lee Hughes equalised with about 2 minutes to go.
So he's the first
ruined the party.
So he's the first visiting player to score at Juventus' stadium.
That's right. Yeah, I think Rob Birch saved a penalty as well. The Notts County keeper.
Oh, did he?
So if Juventus,
it was a good save as well.
If Juventus have gone for a British style of stadium, does that mean every goal scored in it is an English goal?
Yeah,
or
we'll
a
claim
British
that.
Goal?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
something like that.
Imagine being a Notts County fan. It's incredible to go there to see your team come away with a draw and keep saves a penalty.
Absolutely magnificent.
They'll never get
especially with the ups and downs they've had.
Roma had a bit of a funny one as well. They lost at home to Cagliari, didn't they? And Cagliari are alright and stuff, but Luis Enrique he's trying to impose a Barcelona style on Roma. It's not working. They didn't make it through to the Europa League group stages.
Top tonight,
at home. He's not.
Now then, like we said at the start of the show, as promised, we're going to talk about Mario Balotelli and Gigi Buffon and Prandelli visiting a prison in Florence. Did you see the footage of this?
Yeah.
Balotelli walks in. They love him there.
Do they?
Absolutely love him. It was like
a lot of them probably know him.
But yeah. Well, there's a little story we move on
they
to.
They thought, oh, what's he done this time?
Finally come to this.
What is it,
absolutely
Mario?
Absolutely mobbed.
8 to 10 this time, is it?
Like hugging him, kissing him the lot. It was so funny. Like it was incredible to see. Balotelli was absolutely loving it, as you'd imagine. But a lot of
Ramo boys.
A lot of affection towards Big Mario. So yeah, that was quite interesting. Did you not see it, Pete?
I did see it. It's like who played Folsom City?
Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash. Very much like Johnny Cash.
What did I do? Just go in there? Just go right.
They pretty much had a press conference, didn't they?
It was an odd one.
Like a weird little Q&A thing.
And what's the reason for this?
Just lols.
I'm pretty sure it's not that.
Oh, okay. Well, now Balotelli has also been summoned to an Italian court. Apparently, he's been hanging out with mafiosos.
Well, I read this.
Haven't we all? Come on.
Didn't he have like a pretty standard sort of tour of Naples with some?
He went around the Scampia district, which is quite known to be mob territory.
Well, it's from the film Gomorrah.
Yeah, that's right.
And he really liked Gomorrah, it. And he wanted to see where some of it was shot.
Yeah, so now he's helping the police with his inquiries.
Well,
it follows him around, doesn't it? Whatever he does.
He's been summoned to Italian court because he's been hanging around with certain families he might not have done.
To be fair, if you're Mario Balotelli and you're going on this tour, that was going to attract, you know, the great and good of that sort of area, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but hanging out with a criminal is not a crime in itself, is it?
No, exactly. That's what I mean, yeah. I would argue that it wouldn't necessarily be his fault, and he's certainly not the first footballer to be...
He's done some silly things.
Maradona.
Regarding prisons. Last October, him and his brother were questioned by police because they drove into a women's prison in the north of Italy just to see what it was like.
You would, wouldn't you?
Is it like the videos?
Isn't his brother called Enoch?
Yeah.
It's a good name. Very
Enoch
good name.
Balotelli, it's just strange.
Yeah.
It's an awful black guy's name. Christ on
it's like, you know,
Enoch Garnett.
You know the Rugby World Cup's on at the moment. The Argentinian coach is called Santiago Phelan.
Yeah.
It's a good name, isn't it?
Excellent. Nice. Right then, off to the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich 7, Freiburg 0.
That was obscene.
A big score. Dortmund lost at home to Hertha Berlin 2-1.
They did, but did you see the Frank Ribery's goal?
That's great stuff.
He was offside, but it was this really deft little back heel.
Back heel
nutmeg.
Yeah.
When it really looked like it was just going away from him. It was excellent.
All three major leagues have started with big scores, haven't they?
Oh, they have.
Actually, the Dortmund game was interesting because they didn't look that good. Berlin was
they lost.
No, I know they lost, but you know normally they're sort of scintillating, aren't they? But Sven Bender played, which always makes me happy.
Nice. Speaking of Bayern Munich, one of Gomez, because Gomez scored four in that seven. He's got eight league goals already.
It's a haul.
One of them, the defender went to clear it, smashed it against him, it looped over the keeper and went in.
Yeah,
he was off.
Yeah.
He couldn't believe his luck. He was running.
He's obscenely lucky, Gomez. That sort of thing happens to him all the time.
He's not. He's not as lucky as some of the Wolfsburg players. They beat Schalke 2-1, but the other week they lost 4-1, and the players Patrick Helmes and Mario Mandzukic, they were fined $10,000 for failing to follow tactics.
I'd love to see him prove that.
Well, there's quite a few fines at Wolfsburg. €1,000 for an unnecessary back pass, and €500 for failing to control a high ball.
Are they trying to just sign players with this little kitty?
I've no idea. I remember being told that Tagana, when he was in charge of Fulham once, I think he signed someone for just hoofing it up the pitch recklessly, you know, to nobody.
Find somebody.
Yeah.
Rather sign somebody, do you say?
Fine, sorry.
Sign somebody.
You're thinking of Tony Pulis.
But isn't it like €250 for wearing headphones?
Yeah, that's another
like one. That's something I genuinely wish they'd kick out. Because you see, who's I watching all the way again? They're walking from the bus to the changing rooms and stuff, and they've all got their headphones on. I'm like, are you not a group of players who can talk to each other?
It's focus, though, isn't it? It's focus.
But is it, though?
They're all listening to Eminem.
Well, that's what I mean. They've all got their Beats by Dr. Dre, bloody fines by Felix McGarth.
Where's the team spirit in that? Let's kick headphones out of football.
But have you seen... Are they like the headphones you've got on right now, Pete?
Well, they're about the size, yeah. They're sort of they're like £400 worth of headphones.
Have you seen Wolfsburg's sponsor? It's great.
What
I'll
is
just
it?
Pronounce it for you now.
Up!
Up. Up with an exclamation mark. Just really odd.
Right, let's briefly go to France then.
Again, that should be Stokes.
Joe Cole came off the bench for Lille and set up the third in a 3-1 win at Saint-Étienne. Yeah,
at Saint-Étienne, that sort of easy to just march through usually because everyone seemed to be doing it.
Right, yeah, it was just like footballers through butter, wasn't it? It was
him and Hazard.
Yeah, Hazard's first goal in particular was an absolute beauty.
Oh, his second weren't bad. He rifled it in the roof of the net.
Yeah, but the first one had that lovely sort of outside of the boot curl. Just delightful. But yeah, Joe Cole, like when I was watching the highlights of that, I thought Cole was Hazard because of the way he was just running through. It looked like the old Joe Cole, you know,
did.
Just some real dynamism and just...
So what we're saying is, if you put Joe Cole in a game where people are going to give him so much space, he can do whatever he wants, he's quite a good player.
Damn right.
I always suspected that, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, let's hope it carries on.
We've got an Angie update from Russia.
Go on.
They're possibly going to offer Gus Hiddink £22 million a year for 3 years.
I'll do that.
It's not bad, is it? These salaries. Apparently they tried to lure Jose with a similar kind of offer, but he says he has unfinished business at the Burnham.
Imagine Mourinho. People would be killed. Mourinho is so off the hook anyway.
Dani Alves has turned down a move there, apparently. Mm. Just ridiculous. Eto scored two in his first two games, by the way.
I'm just disappointed in Eto with the whole thing. It just seems so unambitious.
That'll be the next sort of big sort of nazzle, won't it, really? Really.
It seems like every goal he scores, it just goes to prove that he shouldn't be there. You know what I mean? It's like the better he does, he's always
Russian,
like...
The Russian league isn't that bad, to be fair. But he should be in a better league, though.
That's that is a fair point, actually. Mm. It is a decent league.
Anyway, let's move on to something a bit more classier. The Middle East. And?
The Middle East, and Diego Corna has relocated...
Oh, my goodness.
...to the Middle East.
They said it couldn't, but it did.
I've come back to you with news of Diego's first press conference as manager of Al Wassel. Now, I know he got the job a long time ago, and I'm pretty sure he should have started ages ago, but he's only just got around to his first presser. And a wonderful chap and listener by the name of Abdullah Tariam has emailed in with a bit of transcription from the press conference itself.
Hey.
Now, he was basically... interviewed by a number of press, asking, you know, what his plans are, what he's been up to, you know, what he sees Al Wassel doing, that sort of stuff. He started off well. A phone went off early on. You switch off your phone. You can talk to your wife later. And he went through a number of different things, sort of calling out the general stuff, like calling out the other team. Saying that in our last two friendlies, we realised there were scouts from Al Jazeera, who are one of their rival teams, watching us. So we're having closed sessions from now on. They will not know how we play on Thursday. We have tactics that will hurt them.
I love it. With Maradona.
In football terms.
It's been said about him before, but everything Maradona does, it has to be against someone, isn't it? It can't just be, you know, winning for the sake of winning and enjoying winning. It has to be proving a point against someone else.
Yeah, absolutely right. And he said he was asked, actually, what it's like to be working with a chairman and a vice president who are apparently only in their 30s. It's a very young setup there. And he said, it's fantastic. Youth have a better approach, unlike in Argentina where it's all museums. The youngest person in the AFA is 95 years old. And
inaccurate.
Another classic is that a confrontation apparently with an opposition manager during a pre-season friendly, right? Confrontational. He said, "I'm not a violent person, but if you want an issue with me, then you'll have it. I was angry because their player wanted to injure one of mine, and they didn't want to listen to what I have to say. If you try and put a finger in my eye, I'll put two fingers in your eyes. This is how I'll die. If you try to harm me, you'll see my violent side."
What's that? An eye for eyes?
Eye for two eyes. Eye for
it's
two
a call eyes. To Mourinho. It seems.
That's not even a response to anything.
No, no.
That's like,
that's how I will die. Is that, how far would you push the fingers into your eyes?
There's no need to be so over the top.
Well, hopefully we'll get an update on that. He ended the press conference by saying, "Thank you all for attending. I will always be available for the media. If you want your 15 minutes of fame, just contact the club and ask for me."
Lovely ending. A mate of mine also.
Thank you very much.
That?
Who was that?
Abdullah Tarian.
Mate of mine was also at that press conference, and he said that he actually got to ask the great man a question, and he said, "Who will be your main goal scorer this season?" He went, "My daughters."
It doesn't make any sense.
Do not trust a translator there.
It's almost like he's trying to belittle the question asker.
Going for gold. Gold.
I think it's time for going for gold.
Oh, is it now?
Yes.
Well, that'll be what that jingle's all about then.
Right then, Pete.
Are you ready, gents?
Yes.
Are you all familiar with the rules, etc., etc.?
Yeah.
Someone's going to take the
lead. Do you want to mention it for the listeners?
Well, basically, I give out a couple of cryptic clues to a footballer. Let's face it, it's going to be a Premier League player, isn't it? You guys have got to basically guess who that is. And when you feel like popping in and taking a crack at the big time, just shout stop. Is it stop?
Stop. Okay. This is the fifth one you've done.
Can we make it up this time in honour of Wolfsburg?
So, okay, can we what?
Yeah, okay. We say up.
Alright, cool. We're saying up.
Got to pronounce the exclamation mark.
Okay, alright.
Here's your first clue, lads. I was born on the 12th of February 1970. I helped my Premier League team to their first European competition post Heysel. I reached the quarterfinals of the World Cup. I scored 14 times for Foggia and 9 times for my country. Still no guesses?
No.
I was bought by Hertha Berlin for 1.5 million. My first club was Vlug and Vardig.
Up. Oh.
Not Paul Stewart, would it?
No.
That's a poor guess.
That's a terrible guess. Awful,
Luke, would you like to have a crack?
Gianna Risa?
No.
Oh.
1970.
Born in 1970, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Why the hell did I just say Paul Stewart?
Two clues left, lads.
Okay.
I'm now the head coach of a very famous B team. Last clue?
Yeah.
This is a giveaway, come on. Think about Vlug and Vardig.
Yeah.
That was his first club. Now head coach of a very famous B team.
Up. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
No. I once said this of my Premier League home. All Nottingham has is Robin Hood, and he's dead.
Up.
Who?
Ryan Roy.
On the last.
See, that was a hard one.
It was not that hard.
It was that hard.
Robin Vardig, clearly Dutch. Very famous.
There are loads
team.
Of Dutch people. We thought they were Scandinavian, clearly.
Yeah, there's only ever been one Dutch player, isn't there?
Oi, I'm in the lead.
Hey.
That's the main thing. And that leads us neatly onto emails.
I refuse to recognise.
Emails him.
Emails. Sorry, yeah. Okay, am I doing the first one then?
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
Hello, boys.
Hello.
Having listened to the story about the piss and feces being thrown around in Germany and Marcus's tale of a fan peering over the edge of the upper tier of a stand in South America, this is from a few weeks ago, I remember my parents telling me stories of being in the away supporters' end of Easter Road during Edinburgh derbies. The stand was apparently on a slope, and throughout the match, fans would be treated to small rivers of pee running down from the back of the stand as fans who'd clearly been tanked up before slash during the match needed to relieve themselves and found no facilities in the near area. There isn't really a point to this story, but I thought I'd share it with you anyway and point out that bodily fluids flowing around at football matches clearly isn't a new thing. Keep rambling. Love, Claire, an actual real life woman.
Easter Road is Hibs ground, we should point out in case anyone doesn't know. It's a funny one, Hibs ground, because it's not bad, but the pitch slopes.
Yeah,
there's an actual little slope, and people would say, "Oh, yeah, no, we're uphill." This
what
this
left
slope.
To right, or but from goal to goal.
I think it's from goal to goal,
okay. Corner to corner.
Yeah,
yeah. I think Hillsborough used to as well. I can think when
Portsmouth's got a little mound in the middle.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. So if you set right on the very front row from one side, if the ball's over the other side on the other flank,
you can't see the ball.
You can't see the ball.
No. That's incredible.
It's got a bit of a mound.
How is that allowed? They need to get the rollers out.
It's always been there, Pete. Don't
get
miss the history.
The rollers out. Get the rollers out.
It's not my Pete. Decision.
Work harder and it might be.
Yeah. Get the rollers out. Bloody idiot.
Pete, what have you got for us, Brad?
I've got one from Matthew Butler from Oxford.
Ooh.
Morning / afternoon / evening ramblers. Delete as appropriate.
Well, it's actually night time, so.
It is night time.
Incredibly,
so
they're all wrong. Good try.
Evening will do.
Evening's fine.
It's not the evening.
Felt it was worth pinging a quick email to corroborate the email from this week's show about the prize of a Coca-Cola Cup bike during League Cup games.
Yay.
Don't start, Matthew. You know what happened last week. I couldn't keep it together. I have fond memories of watching Oxford United at our old Manor Ground in 96-97 when a certain red-branded two-wheeler made an appearance. Our man between the sticks, Phil God Whitehead, as we blasphemously referred to him in those days.
I remember him.
He was decent. He won a Coca-Cola bike for being chosen as man of the match. This is awarded to him at full time on the pitch in a bizarre ceremony involving your typical football league ropey mic and tannoy combination.
Nice.
The muffled interview and awkward jokey conversation only added to the bafflement for those of us making our way to the turnstiles. Whitehead then proceeded to hop on the bike and ride in front of the London Road end across the length of the pitch and down the tunnel to perplexed cheers from the home fans. I would like to think he proceeded to speed on through the doors, exit the stadium, take a quick jaunt down the A34 and arrive home in full kit to a startled wife wondering, where am I going to put that thing? Yeah. Sadly, I imagine instead Whitehead got to the changing room and asked a club official to stick it on eBay for him or wherever the equivalent was in the crazy Britpop days of the mid-1990s.
Free ads.
Loot. Yeah.
That's just so strange. If you want a bike, you maybe go to someone like Rally, you know, not Coca-Cola.
And the other thing is, what happens if you're man of the match and you're in the away team and you get presented with that bike? Right, say you're playing it away at Plymouth and you play for Sunderland. What are you going to do with it? It's the last thing you want. It's literally the last thing you want.
That's what Lee Hughes is waiting.
You pop wheelies all the way home. You're man of the match. Celebrate.
Lee Hughes is waiting at the oversized baggage carousel. At Nottingham Airport. East Midlands Airport, Coventry Airport?
Hey, one of them.
Who knows?
East Midlands is definitely an airport.
Thank you, Matthew Butler.
Thank you.
Good people, it's profile time, and we have an Italian defending legend for you. It's Gaetano Scirea. Unfortunately, this month does mark the 22nd anniversary of his tragic death, but...
Let's commemorate it.
Yeah, indeed.
Unfortunately. It's a good thing that we can remember him.
That's right, very much. So, and it did the Juventus with their new stadium as well, and I believe that a part of their stadium is named after the great man.
Tell us about him.
Well, wasn't part of the Stadio delle Alpi as well?
Yeah, they've carried it
they've
on,
carried
sorry.
Over, which
the
is
curve of Scirea, yeah.
That's right. Forgive me. So, one of the finest liberos of the game, damn it all.
He's also another one, leading up from Paul Breitner, who we did last week. Another sort of quite unheralded player.
Yeah.
You hear about sort of classic Italian defenders, certainly more recently, with sort of Baresi, Costa Curta, Nesta, and also Gentile as well, who was around the same sort of time. Scirea was a Rolls-Royce, though. Elegant.
Yeah, very much
elegant.
Surging.
One of the finest defenders to play the game. I'm going to say it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah. He was a product of the successful... Oh, no, sorry, hang on a minute. Born on the 25th of May, 1953.
14 years before the Summer of Love.
Damn right it was. He was a product of the successful Atalanta Academy back in the 70s, and he quickly became known as the quiet, calm kind of guy on the pitch, very level-headed, didn't make any naughty challenges. He was just a real rock. you know, solid. You could rely on him. Apparently, the coaches of the Atalanta youth team would offer him a bonus if he got a yellow card, because he was just perfect. He's just immaculate player. Very non-aggressive as well. And this wasn't to his detriment. It was his reading of the game was superb, and his precision in the tackle. So, he didn't.
It's like JT now.
Well, you could argue, but you would lose.
You say that, but Shirio also was a player. He wasn't sort of, he didn't have an awful lot of pace. He wasn't that quick, really. Mm. He was more positionally based, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah,
and very, very comfortable on the ball as well.
But he's a very non-aggressive player, and like I say, and perhaps these attributes contributed to that. But above all, it just wasn't in his nature. Mm. He's a real nice guy, and we'll talk about that. So, Shirio, he signed for Juventus at the age of 21 and became a starter straight off the bat, and he would play the rest of his career there. He played a sweeper role, as we said, in the heart of defence with Claudio Gentile.
Mm.
Imagine coming up against those two.
Yeah. Is this why he was so sort of calm and collected?
Just
had to be.
Yeah. You see lineups of the camera going past sort of Juventus players, and like I think. So maybe, I don't know, in the new European Cup final or something like that, which we'll come on to, and you see Gentile, moustache, hair, big gold chain, like almost literally snarling. Yeah. And right next to him is this sort of zen-like piece of Shiria just stood there, staring into space, perfectly focused.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Gentile's, I mean, he's worth a profile in himself.
But not now.
No. His time will come, I'm sure. Yeah. Real tough tackling defender. But at the heart of defence, I mean, it was a great back line they had. And if you managed to get through, you got Dino's off.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. If you're a striker, you're thinking, I'll just be having an assist or something.
Yeah. I'll just run the channels.
Look busy.
Yeah.
Indeed. So, he played a sweeper role. I did, Shirai. It's not really around anymore, as we said, that kind of position. I mean, it would be the player in the team who would operate in such a way that it would be obviously behind the defence, but also kind of a playmaker as well. It's quite an odd position, really.
They'd soak it up. They'd always be the one with the ball.
That's right.
They'd receive it from the goalkeeper as well, so they'd be the first sort of...
He always receive it from the keeper. Every single time he's off at the ball, you'd see him roll it out to Shirai. He's so comfortable on the ball, he was like a midfield player. And the amount of times you saw him, if you watch reruns and videos of Juventus goals now, a lot of times him scoring them, a lot of time the ball comes down the left or something, they'll knock it inside, play a ball over the top, someone will nod it on, and the number six is bombing on from nowhere. Volley top corner. It's a centre back.
Yeah, it's incredible. Obviously Franz Beckenbauer was kind of the first great libero, but he was certainly the second one. I would hasten to add Franco Baresi would go on to fill his shoes very much.
Baresi couldn't get in the team
in the Italian side.
Baresi could get in the Italian side because
I mean, he was a bit younger, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but he was coming through and Shirai just keeping him out of it.
But the sweeper was kind of like the fulcrum of the team, as I say, and you'd need to read the game impeccably if you were that position. And, you know, Gaetano certainly did that as well. Marshalling the defence, breaking up attacks, and starting attacks, as you said, Luke, you know, and Pete, and an incredible player. And it's. Part of me thinks it's a shame you don't have that position now, but the game's changed and another.
Thomas Vermaelen occasionally sort of plays in that.
I'm not having that.
He doesn't play in that style. I'm not comparing him to Shirai.
Good, but
the last great libero was Jonathan Woodgate.
Woodgate's comfortable on the ball, though. I think Jimbo. I know what you're saying. but I would argue maybe that these days it's almost expected of a player, whatever position they play, to be comfortable on the ball. Mm. And if they're not at the top level, it's more of a surprise. Whereas back then, you had players who maybe weren't, who were just glorified hatchet men a lot of the time.
It's such an odd position, isn't it? It seems counterintuitive to the very nature of the game. And the fact that there's so many of these players from sort of back in the day were so good in that position, it's just a real sort of...
It's the space between the striker running on and sort of having that sort of 50-50 ball between the goalkeeper and the attacker running on. And that completely cuts out any sort of chance like that because you've got this player who just soaks up all the pressure and stuff, and he's a fantastic example of that.
Yeah, totally.
And what it comes from as well is also the game being a lot slower paced then.
Mm. Yeah.
So if you're going to play that close to your goal, you've got to be comfortable on the ball, haven't you? Otherwise, you're going to be asking for trouble, you know. You couldn't have a player who didn't lock the ball at his feet.
But it's great to see a defender dribble it out.
Oh, great. Know? Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know.
I'm telling you, you watch rerun. I tell you, the best way to do it is when he wasn't wearing number six, he was wearing number seven, but in the World Cup in 82, every time Zoff had the ball, roll out to Shirai.
Yeah.
He'd have a look around, start it off. Mm. You know, wonderful passing.
I mean, it reminds me of Sol Campbell in 98.
Yeah, very similar, yeah.
But yeah, very great.
graceful, composed and calm player. As you said to me earlier, is it fair to say he's pretty comfortable on the ball?
Oh, he loves it.
And he was a great leader as well, but again, just so quiet, calm, reserved.
Trapattoni said he was a leader in a monk's habit.
Yeah, exactly.
He was so well-mannered. Obviously never got a red card. I'm sure you'll come on.
Absolutely. He never sent off in his whole career. And there was a story in a match between Juventus and Fiorentina. A fight broke out with the players, and they were all sort of wading in left, right and centre, and the big man separated the players, and he was pointing up at the stands, was Ashiria, and saying, look, your wives are watching, stop it.
You know,
it's sorting them out.
Amazing bloke.
Or now it would be because the wags are watching and so on and so forth. He was great mates with Dino Zoff, and Dino Zoff would say to journalists, because he was very shy, Shiria, in front of the journalists, and Dino Zoff said, if you have anything to say to him, you say it to me. You've got to protect him. But he was an extraordinary man, a real gentleman, and when Juventus won the title in 1975, Shiria was out on the town with his teammates, which was very rare. They could never get him out, And he said he got home at like 6 in the morning. He went to get a paper, which was all about the team's victory, to commemorate the victory, the win. And he decided against it because the newsagents was next to a tram stop, which took workers to Fiat factories. So, and then the reason for this was he said he was ashamed to be seen dressed up for a night out at that time when people were going to work in the morning.
Put your dressing gown on.
Yeah, get changed.
But what a gent, though. He's always thinking about other people.
It's like George Best.
It's just like George
Best. And with the Fiat thing, he sort of refused. I think his partner's parents is sort of parents-in-law. Parents-in-law? Mm. Father-in-law, mother-in-law. They bought him a BMW and he refused to drive it because Fiat was Juventus, and he would only drive a Fiat.
Because they were so interlinked.
And he would see it as some sort of betrayal if he drove anything else, which I think
it's incredible, isn't it?
Man,
incredible.
It reminds me of Ludic McClosco and his Skodas.
Yeah. And when those United players would only ever use Vodafone mobile phones, remember that?
Yeah, that'll be right. He played the rest of his career at Juventus, won everything possible: 7 league titles, domestic cups, UEFA Cup, Cup Winners' Cup, and a European Cup.
Yeah, he won the European Cup with Juve in 85, which was the Heiser disaster. So, I mean, the final was obviously a bit of a footnote after what happened. I mean, I know they sort of elected to carry on playing the game because of various reasons, but he captained the event this day.
But all three European trophies.
Yeah, I'm having that.
Very few people.
Won the World Cup as well, Marcus. Come on.
That's probably the best bit.
Yeah, I'd say so.
In 1982, he was called up to the national team in 74, quickly established himself alongside a number of his Juventus teammates in that lineup. He played at 3 World Cups, but 82 World Cup was the one that we probably all remember him for, and he roomed with Dino Zoff. It's got a nice little story. He roomed with Dino Zoff at that World Cup, and it was their hotel room was referred to as Switzerland. It was the most tranquil room in the whole of the hotel. Marco Tardelli would often go there if he couldn't sleep before a big match because it was just so calm in there.
When he was at Juve, he had an apartment with Spinozzi.
Yeah, that's right.
He sort of apparently you couldn't get him out. Like, yep. He would just be sat there watching TV, and Spinozzi would come in after a big night out and he'd be drunk and he'd be like looking in, and he'd just been watching television all night.
There's a Shiria award that they give out to football rivals, isn't there as well?
The person who has conducted themselves in off and on the field, real gentlemanly conduct. Yeah, and that's cool.
I love the 82 World Cup final though, because it's the final where Tardelli scored that goal.
Yeah,
the most emotional celebration ever. Where he scores the second and Italy go on to win 3-1. It's the same final that Brighton scored in.
Yeah,
and or one of the finals that Brighton scored in, and Tardelli is just going absolutely ballistic.
Yeah, it's class.
He can't believe it. It's the closest I've ever seen to like a human being actually exploding. He looks like he's going to explode. He's got so much emotion to get.
Yeah, he's super.
It's the cherry on the Fiat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weirdly, do you remember when Grosso scored in the semis?
It was similar to that, wasn't it?
Really, really similar. In the 2006 World Cup. It was really lovely symmetry there.
Yeah.
Mm. In 86, he retired from international football after being knocked out in the second round at the 86 World Cup. And then in 1988, he retired fully from the game and became assistant coach to Dino Zoff at Juventus. But on his retirement from the international game in 86, France Football magazine described him as better than Pelé, Johan Cruyff and Alfredo Di Stefano. Perhaps generous, but that's France Football magazine.
Well, in his position, you don't hear the greatest players of all time ever as defenders.
Yeah, maybe Beckenbauer's the only one.
Yeah, but he was never realistically put in like the top five, would he? People just don't think of defenders.
Okay, fair enough.
And so if you're going to judge people on how good they were in their particular position, then you've got to put certain players like that up there, haven't you? It's only fair, I think.
Yeah. Sadly, though, in 1989, when he was on a scouting mission in Poland, he was involved in a car crash and died at the age of 36. The whole of Italy mourned this, of course. But just such a good guy. Everybody loved him. Opposition fans, nobody had a bad word to say about him.
And as a scout as well, he was very much incredibly committed to that particular role as well. I mean, he didn't necessarily need to be making that trip.
Yeah, wasn't it? He'd already seen the team. Yeah. He'd already scouted them once, and he went anyway.
He dies at 36, Blatter in his 70s. It's not fair, is it? It's not fair.
No. Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, the fans still love him. They still chant his name. And his influence on Italian players will always live on.
Oh, well, going on from that, Dino Zoff actually also said without him, you wouldn't have Maldini.
Yeah.
He said Maldini was his natural heir, and Maldini learned a lot from Scirea.
Baresi. I would have wagered, Costa Curta and Nesta and all those great Italian centre backs and all. But I'll leave the last words to European football journalist James Horncastle, whose piece on Scirea has been priceless in the making of this profile. And he said, what made Scirea remarkable wasn't just his professionalism or his sense of loyalty, it was the privilege he felt at being a footballer, and he never lost that feeling. And a top man, top gentleman is coming into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Your wives are watching.
Yeah. Listening. Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, that is the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've had a lovely time. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. And there's a website called thefootballramble.com, isn't there, James?
There is, and there's loads of stuff on it. This week, the blog features an insight into the inner workings of Nicholas Bentner's brain, courtesy of Andy Brassel. Chris Mann looks at Phil Jones and his impressive start to life at Man United, while Luke gets upset because some people sang at Wembley. Lols. To check that out. Amongst plenty of other stuff on the blog and elsewhere on the site, we join forces with Pick Live for some live fantasy football, so do get over there and check that out. There are minute by minute reports on games that sort of pop up here and there, and of course the forum, where you can read about anything from Noel Gallagher to the romantic adventures of the forum users. So yeah, do get over there, thefootballramble.com.
Yeah, and the forum is 1 year old today. Wednesday that the show comes out.
The entire site, including the forum, is a year old. Yeah, so thanks for all your support.
Round of applause.
Yeah, round of applause for everyone.
It's not in the Hall of Fame, but we'll give it a bit of...
Not for us, I mean, for the web users.
Yeah.
It's honour, I'm giving away a video game. I haven't done this for a little while, but it's a good one this time. It's none of your usual fodder that I get sent occasionally. Dead Island. It's number one in the video game charts at the moment. It's a fantastic piece of work, and I have not stopped playing it personally. That is my video game of the week.
So get on the forum for a chance to win that.
It is an 18 though, isn't it, Pete?
Yes. All right, Mr.
Get your parents' permission. Get in the login for you.
There we go. That gives me just about enough time to say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next week.
McKinnon. Collymore. Phillips. Roy turns the quickest. Gets a bit of luck with the bounce. Stone got a deflection. And it's Kingsley Black who has scored.
Pregnant now.
The things I do for entertainment.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.